Have you listened to the Drew Marshall Show before?
George Bush is the Antichrist. Honest to God.
You think George Bush is the Antichrist?
Yes.
Okay, so George Bush is the Antichrist because he's a nice guy.
He's a nice guy. He's fooling people. He's a trickster.
Would you vote for George W. Bush?
Absolutely.
Why? He's the Antichrist.
I think the guy needs to read his Bible.
Would you vote for George W. Bush?
Absolutely. I hope he's not the Antichrist because then I'm going to vote for the wrong guy.
Yeah, I hate when that happens.
The Drew Marshall Show, right here on Joy 1250.
You're listening to the show that talks about stuff the others can't, don't, or won't. The Drew Marshall Show on Joy 1250.
Well, animal expert Jungle Jack Hanna's hands-on approach has won him widespread acclaim as director emeritus of the Columbia Zoo, conservationist, author, television personality, and longtime adventurer. After 12 years hosting Jack Hanna's Animal Adventures, he launched his latest syndicated TV series, Jack Hanna's Into the Wild, a 2008 winner of the Emmy Award. Recognized around the U.S. as America's favorite zookeeper, Jack has made countless appearances since 1983 on shows like Good Morning America, Late Show with David Letterman, Larry King, Ellen DeGeneres, The Maury Show, Fox News program, CNN News, and today he makes an appearance on The Drew Marshall Show. Good to have you, Jack.
Good to be here today.
JackHanna.com, that's the website, and one of the books that we're talking about these days is called Jungle Jack, My Wildlife. Jack Hanna, you've got a lot of pokers in the fire. Like, what's the go with that, man?
I don't know. I just love what I do and that type of thing. So, you know, as long as I always tell my kids and people I make speeches around the country, if you love what you do and, you know, you work hard and enthusiastic, you should succeed. So anyway, I love what I do, so that's why I do it.
Good for you. I'd like to introduce you to a friend of mine, a co-host today. Ellen Graf Martin is with R.G. Mitchell Family Books, the organization that's repping your book up here. Is that what we say, distributing? Is that the...
Distributing, marketing.
Marketing, publishing, all that kind of stuff. So Ellen, this is Jack.
Hi, Jack.
How you doing, Ellen?
I'm great. I have to tell you, when I was reading your book, I was laughing out loud. I woke up my husband.
She had some incontinence issues while she was reading your book.
The stories are incredible.
Yeah, I know. When I was doing the book, I'll never ever do another autobiography. It takes a lot of work, obviously. But when I was doing that book and all those stories are so true, it amazes me that I even did them. But I did what I did. But, you know, I guess I did it because it's all documented. So, you know... It's hard to believe I'm alive.
Yes, it is hard to believe you're alive. I saw some clips on YouTube, and I got to say, you got some serious guts.
Well, it's not just guts. I think, you know, it's a matter. Obviously, the croc, Steve Irwin, was a conservation friend of ours, and we just got through doing our new series. Got through doing several days there and two shows with the family. But Steve was, even though I didn't agree with a lot of stuff he did, he was one of the greatest conservationists in history from the standpoint that he gave I'm not a brand like Steve was. He was a multimillionaire, but most of his money went toward buying lands over 300,000 acres throughout the world for animals. And that's the way he lived, you know. He lived that way. That's the way he was raised. The problem is today, when I started my animal show 20-something years ago, there were two animal shows, mine and National Geographic. Today there's 43 animal shows.
Oh, my goodness.
And the difference is a lot of these young guys today want ratings. They want the Hollywood money. They want this about getting bit in blood and all that kind of stuff. And that's just not something that I do. I film with respect of animals. And even though Steve, Steve was raised that way. He not acting for cameras. That's the way he was. And I respect that. But these guys today, some of them, I just have no use for them.
You know, when Steve passed, we're talking about Steve Irwin. When he passed away, I had the chaplain from the park on the show. We talked about how everyone's doing and just this grief that kind of hung over everybody there, of course.
Yep.
And I have some friends that run a camp right beside the park or just down the street kind of thing. And the reputation of him is he's the same guy on camera as he is off the camera. He's just as nuts everywhere he goes.
I mean, he looks like he's had 50 cups of coffee before he even gets up. But that's just the way he is, you know. And I'm basically the same way I was since our farm in Tennessee. It's just that, you know, I don't look at what I do as really a TV camera. I look at it me talking to one or two people. You know, I don't look at when I do David Letterman, for example, this Thursday night. I don't look at 55 cameras or 4 million people. I look at just talking to David Letterman, whoever's sitting there in the audience. It could be one person. Same thing with Good Morning America, same thing with Larry King. Whatever shows I do, I just try and bring to people the conservation of the animal world in a fun and entertaining way and hopefully learn something.
Jack, just between you and me, okay? Just between you and me.
Yep.
Of all the talk shows you've been on, who's the biggest wimp? Letterman?
No. Ellen.
Ellen?
Ellen's one of the neatest people as far as from the standpoint of her knowledge and love of animals. Her mother I talked to and said that Ellen, even when she was before college, she was going to be a veterinarian. She studied she really, beyond any of the hosts I have, probably has a sincere love for the animal world. And when I go on there, we have a lot of fun, but let me tell you something. A lot of these shows I do, like Letterman, you know, I'll have the animals there. And even though now this is my 23rd year, by the way, next week when I do it.
Congratulations.
And so, you know, you have to be prepared to have, you know, some stuff slung at you and everything else and come back with a quick answer. But with Ellen, you better have some right answers because she knows her stuff.
But who's the scaredy cat? Is it Letterman? Is it Larry King?
Well, no, it could be Larry King a little bit. It could be Dave a little bit. You know, not because they're it's because they're unfamiliar. I'll never forget the first Larry King show I did about 18 years ago. I do about 3 one-hour specials a year for him, and I'll never forget Larry King looked at me when he used to be out of Washington. This is one whole hour show I got to do with him, my very first one. He looked at me about 30 seconds before he go on. He goes, "Hey, Jack." I mean, "What's that, Larry?" He goes, "I don't like animals." And right for 30 seconds, I said, "Oh my God, what am I going to do for 1 hour? But he didn't mean it that way. He meant the fact that he never saw an animal in his entire life. He was raised in the concrete jungles of New York, so he never even knew an animal was.
Unbelievable. Well, now, you weren't raised in the concrete jungles of New York. Take us back to those days when you were 11 years old cleaning cages for the local vet.
Well, that's just how it all started. You know, the veterinarian came to our farm, and I asked him one day if I could clean cages because I wanted to see what his clinic was like. It was just a little thing down in Knoxville, so my dad took me the first day. The next day, I'd get on a bus and went 15 miles like you hear about your grandfather, but that's what I did, and went down there and cleaned cages. He thought it lasted a day. Well, I tell you what, I lasted for 4 years. I loved it. Every summer, I got $10 a week. I went there and cleaned from daylight till dark, and then went after that on some of his calls. And then when I was 16, he went to the zoo to be like a, you know, donated services to help a little old zoo there in Knoxville. It was terrible, and back then, most zoos were terrible, and unlike today, where they're fantastic places for animals. But anyway, I went there with him, and I was fascinated. I said, "Man, someday I'm going to be a zookeeper." So when I was 16, I said what I was going to be the rest of my life, and I never wavered from that dream. I went to college, majored in political science, believe it or not, because I there wasn't anybody teaching anything other than I took a science or two course. But, you know, I was called in the president of Muskingum College, where I went in Ohio. I was called into his office my senior year, and he said, "Jack, in the 200-year history of the school, no one ever wanted to be a zookeeper." He said, "Why would you do that and spend all this money for your education and waste your time with just cleaning filthy animals?" In other words, he wasn't trying to be mean. That's just how it was thought of then.
Yeah.
And that didn't bother me. I said, "No, I'm going to do it." So I left and went back to Knoxville. They went in the Army during the Vietnam War. I wasn't shipped over there, but all my buddies were. I don't know why I wasn't. But anyway, the point was that when the service came out and became a zookeeper again and just continued that dream, that's all. And just worked my way just, you know, back then, there were prisoners working in the Knoxville Zoo. In 1978, when I got to Columbus, there were work release programs here. Today, if we have one opening in our animal department, we have 500 applications in a week.
Wow.
So it's all changed business right now.
Oh, totally. Well, look, the biggest thing that my jaw drops when I read your resume and look at your facts and your bio is that you and your wife, Susie, have been married since 1968?
40 years. God, can you believe that?
That's unbelievable.
Yeah,
unbelievable.
I didn't think I'd live that long.
And she, you married the cheerleader.
Yeah, the captain of cheerleaders, yep.
Buddy, you're doing all right, man.
But no, she loved animals as much as me, and that's what it takes in any relationship. I don't care we love hiking. For I have a home in Montana, and all I do is we love hiking, period. That's our life. And so people ask me how I relax. I don't play golf or anything like that. My life is my work, and the Columbus Zoo in Ohio is my life, and that's what we do when we leave. We go hiking or see my grandkids.
But everybody wants to know how you did it, right? How did you stay married 40 years?
Let me tell you something. It's work. I don't care what anybody tells you about marriage. It is work. It's a give-and-take situation. And, you know, there have been some rough times from the standpoint of just, you know, I say rough, not rough, just the typical, I can really say fights, not fights, discussions. Let's put it that way.
Yes, okay, discussions.
Discussions. And whenever my wife would get mad, real mad at me and stuff, the only thing I could do to make her happy the first 20 years was she loves to eat. And she's not real fat. She's an attractive woman. But anyway, I bought her watermelons and a big piece of roast, and it would work every time.
Hold on. Are you telling me you fed your wife to make her happy?
Oh, yeah. No, she doesn't drink or anything, so she doesn't like flowers. I mean, she loves flowers. She has a beautiful yard, but I knew that to get to her, you'd have to get to her stomach, and that's what I did.
Wow.
The only time she really got mad at me was in 1973. She was breastfeeding my second daughter, Suzanne, and I had we had an animal place in Tennessee. It was like a dream. I mean, I raised animals for a lot of zoos. I had tigers, lions. I had all kinds of animals there that I was raising for other zoos. And I had two chimpanzees there that were young, and that mine wasn't eating. And she was bottle feeding the one chimp and breastfeeding, and I was bottle feeding my chimp, and he wouldn't eat. I just looked it up. I just looked up at her before I could say, hey. She said, no way, Jack. I was going to ask her to breastfeed my chimpanzee. I think she would have done it, but she said, I'd tell everybody anyway.
So she should have just done it and got it over with.
Exactly, because I'll tell you anyways.
Yeah, exactly. Oh, man, that is some kind of funny. What are your three daughters doing these days? Any of them work with you or with animals?
Yeah, might be Kathleen.
One and the same.
My Kathleen, my oldest, lives in England. She's been there about 14 years. She just had two kids, so she screwed up the whole show. anyway, but she worked with me for about, golly day, 6-7 years on Animal Ventures. I mean, she does half the shows, and she's tremendous. And then Suzanne's now starting with me. Her kids are all in school.
Okay.
Her youngest is 9, and she has them up to 13. So I'm incorporating the family now in our new series from the standpoint, not because I want to put them on TV. There's some kids that can't do it. Some can.
Sure.
But it kind of shows people that what I do, you can take the family and do the same thing, not everything, but some of the same things I do. So she's doing that. And Julie, my youngest daughter, has been here at the zoo for 6 years, and she's in charge of promotions. As a matter of fact, she works with promotions, and she'll be helping me with David Letterman on Thursday night. She's raising two, with the other people, raising two snow leopards. And that. So we have all kinds of animals still that come over to the house. You know, cloud leopards, snow leopards, camels. My house, you couldn't sell. You couldn't give my Nagum house away. You couldn't give it away.
No.
I don't mean crap like crap, but I mean.
Right. Okay. Thanks for clearing that up. Yeah. Now, I can imagine when the girls were dating, you know, dating the daughters of Jungle Jack.
Oh, yeah, that wasn't pleasant.
Did you ever mess with any of the guys? Like, bring out a snake and just kind of, you know?
Well, yeah, I always sometimes. But one of them, I'll never forget the night that somebody started throwing rocks at the window, and it scared me. I thought it was a robber. I jump up, and I don't wear any clothes usually when I sleep. So,
sorry, I missed that part?
I don't wear usually clothes when I sleep because I'm a jungle man. Anyway, right. I jump up out of bed. This is a true story. I'm in a neighborhood. I jump up out of bed because I live right near the zoo here, so I don't have to have that many animals at home. I jump up out of bed and start going outside. I forgot to put my clothes on and chase these two guys that were her buddies trying to put rocks in her window and chase them about, I mean, I must have been half a mile.
But
all of a sudden, I look at myself and go, golly, Jack, look at you. If somebody came by here right now, what are you going to tell them? So I had to go back through the woods, get prickers in my feet, naked, to get back in the house.
Naked. Oh, my goodness. Yeah, it's one story after another with this gentleman, folks, Jack Hanna. Jack, how's Julia's health these days?
Well, thanks for asking. It's good. Obviously, we have our, you know, situation. She got the leukemia in 1976 or so. And then went to St. Jude's, which is something I really support a lot in Memphis, Tennessee. And out of 12 kids on her floor, only two survived. She was one, but as a result, she survived from we had five different types of treatments there. It's a research center, so they did all five, which is radiation to the brain for 3 weeks in a row when she was only 2 years old. And if you know about the brain development, that's when it develops. Mm-hmm. But then that caused a huge brain tumor in 1996 or 7 when she was a senior at college. So that was a mess. That was we thought we were going to lose her then, but the just disturbed her organizational skills a little bit. Then she's had fibroid tumors, a bunch of 4 pounds of them removed about 3 years ago. But the point is that she's a beautiful person. Julie is a beautiful, beautiful lady. So any listeners that might be Christians, that might be 28 years old to 31, give me a call. I'm listed Jungle Jack Hanna. But I'm sure she's a beautiful girl, too. But she just loves animals. So right. They love animals. And that kind of thing. She's a neat person. So anyway, that's my plug on the show, by the way, today. It's the only plug I got.
Yeah, I like that. I like that. That's good. Jack Hanna's Passport into the Wild. Kids join Jungle Jack on an exciting, interactive, and educational excursion across the seven continents. Your stuff just goes across all age groups. All age groups. I mean, this children's stuff is amazing.
Yeah, you know, I love to do children's books. I've got done about 12 or 13 books. I don't know how many, but this Passport in the Wild goes, as you said, goes to every continent. I guess you could teach a 6-year-old up to maybe even a 6th, 7th grader about the book. It's interesting, the facts. I talk about all the continents I go to and a little bit about the continents. It's pretty simple. Then we have our magnet book that just came out about 6 months ago. It's a little book for kids that might be anywhere from 2 to 3 on up to 6 maybe. It's that one. And then we have the autobiography that came out, I think, just last week. Am I right?
Who's right.
Ellen Boy, right. He's doing good, isn't he?
That's awesome. Yeah, that's awesome. You know, that book, when I was reading it, all I could think of is this is what you were created to do. This, you are doing exactly what you were created to do. It was phenomenal because not very many, and it was inspirational because so many people are not doing what their passion is.
No, you're right. It's something that my first autobiography by Doubleday was 1987. I published it, and I wasn't, not because I was known. I did a lot of TV then. But the point is, Thomas Nelson Publishing, it's a publishing group out of Nashville. They did Billy Graham's autobiography and other people. They just found it fascinating. I said, I don't know if I want to do another one. They said, Jack, we'll have somebody help you. Just please tell us what's happened since 1987, and we'll look at the old book, take a few excerpts from it, not many, and we'll update it. I said, okay. So then I got into it, and once you got into it, plus I think you'll see, Ellen, that we have a lot of new pictures,
mm-hmm.
Color pictures. I'm a picture person, so it shows what kind of how I developed through life with the animal world, these pictures do. So it's a book, really, and you have to agree, it's a book that's what I call, I don't mean good toilet reading. I'm not a real big reader, but it's a book that somebody can start reading, and some people tell me, I don't know, that they have a hard time putting it down because they're having so much fun with it. So it's a book that you really, if you just sat down on a beach someday, you could probably, if you're a good reader, you could read it, probably 4 or 5 hours.
Nice.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. The whole book. And so, you know, I'm proud of the book, and hopefully it'll do well, not because I don't, that's not where I'm intending to make my entire life living by any means, but I'm just saying that I think it'll teach, as you just said, a lot of young people that might be looking for something, not understanding really what they're for in life, that they can all succeed. I don't care who you are, what race, creed, or color, whatever you do, you can go ahead and you can be what you want to be. I don't care if you're a plumber, filling station, a football player, you don't have to be somebody famous. Just do what you love to do, and you'll succeed. That's all.
Good words from Jungle Jack Hanna, TV personality and author, on the line with us here, and just talking about life, where he's been, what he's done. As a matter of fact, you've been pretty much all over the world, have you not?
Every continent, at least twice. In Africa, we have a home in Rwanda, where I'm kind of dedicating my life now.
Yeah, actually, I'd like you, can you talk about the stuff that's going on there for you?
Real quickly, it dates back to 1982, the first time I went to Rwanda, which was way a long time ago. And Rwanda was obviously a very poor country. Hutus and Tutsis were there. As you know, that's two different tribes of people. Hutus are basically a smaller type of people. The Tutsis are taller. And as you know, then I went there and I knew Diane Fossey, Gorillas in the Mist. You may have heard of her. She was murdered there in Rwanda. She helped habituate gorillas and save the mountain gorilla, which there are only about 620 left in the world.
Wow.
These are big, hairy gorillas. The gorillas you see in zoos today are lowland gorillas. About 300,000 of those throughout the world. But this is a mountain gorilla, much bigger, much hairier, live at altitudes of 8,000 to 12,000 feet. And that's what I've dedicated my life to. That's how I got involved with Rwanda. Then, of course, the genocide happened in 94, where 850,000 people were hacked to death in 70 days, killed, hacked, no guns. And then I didn't know what to do two years after that, but the zoo, I got the Columbus Zoo, where I was director, to come in there, and we dumped what we thought was a lot of money, several hundred thousands of dollars of fixing up the place to take care of the gorillas, paying for the trackers up there. And then that led to us building and taking over an orphanage by Rosalind Carr, an American who a lot of her staff were killed in the genocide, but all these kids were there. So we basically we're the main supporter of that, which we still are today because she died. And then we also built a school for Frederick, who had both his arms cut off, who's a tremendous human being. You ought to get him on your show sometime. He speaks broken English. And we just built him a school that opened 2 months ago, a beautiful school for what they call the beggar kids, kids that were maimed in the genocide or kids who are just lazy and want to beg and steal. So he got them off the streets in Rwanda. Rwanda now is the safest, most democratic country in Africa.
Really?
You won't believe it. Under President Paul Kagame, construction there looks like New York City right now.
So Kagame's still running the show?
The man is a very good friend of mine. It's incredible what he has done. It's now the cleanest country in Africa, and I'll tell you this, probably one of the cleanest countries in the world.
Wow.
He outlawed plastic bags last year. Outlawed plastic bags. Have you ever heard of such a thing? Nobody's done that.
Wow.
Ever in I know of any country. And you can't find a piece of paper as big as your thumb hardly anywhere. Even though you see poverty, yes, and you have AIDS, you don't see any paper or trash anywhere. If you do, you're fined. In other words, some people say he's not a dictator at all. He realizes that he has to keep tight control until he has his educational system set up. He has every middle school in Rwanda in less than 2 years, will have online into every dirt school online. Can you imagine that? A friend of mine, John Dick, is doing it. He's a multimillionaire in England. So I can go on. I'm so excited about Rwanda that it's just fun to see. And let me say one last thing about it. And the reason it's worked in Africa, and I'm pretty good at Africa because I've been there going 50-something times, I don't know how many countries, filming and working with people. But the reason it's working in Rwanda is very simple. Non-corruption. Now, you may say, well, how come there's not corruption? Because the good Lord, I think, sent Paul Kagame there, who does not stand for one word, and that's corruption.
Hmm.
And what's corruption mean? It means that you have something somebody wants, correct?
Yeah.
That's how it starts. Well,
greed.
If you sit down with Paul Kagame, he'll sit and tell you that in his beautiful little, where the capital is there, it's a beautiful home in the little capital he has there. He'll tell you, He said, look up, Jack. I had dinner with him last year. He said, look up, just my family and I. He said, look up at that ceiling. I said, look up. He said, you see that light fixture? I said, yeah. He said, you couldn't find one in this entire country. You couldn't find water. Right now there's no titles to any land there. There was nothing, no electricity, no health, no just people dying in the streets. And so therefore, how many people do you think wanted Rwanda?
Yeah.
Nobody.
Yeah.
And so he came in and took it. And when you see it today, it literally blows your mind. It's like it's so exciting. It's so much fun to see that it works somewhere in Africa.
Hmm. That's really inspirational. I've interviewed the Bishop of Rwanda.
Oh,
Is it Rucciani? Yeah, Rucciani.
No, you haven't.
Yes, I have.
He's a good friend of mine.
Well, the reason I got hooked up with him was, I think it was through Ellen, who's sitting across the desk from me right now. And he's also good friends of the Warrens, Rick and Kay Warren, who I just spent last week with down in California. Do you know Rick Warren?
Yeah, I'm on a committee of seven of us. Rick Warren, myself, the founder of Starbucks. There's seven of us that are what they call a presidential committee. I should keep my mouth shut because no one knows the committee. We're there just to – we don't get paid. We're just there to help. And, of course, Rick has talked to him before. I have a house in Rwanda. I think he stayed in my house before.
Wow.
But what a neat guy. I mean, was a heck of a thing he did with the presidential thing. Wasn't
it? Unbelievable. Unbelievable. And another gentleman I had on my show, geez, this is like old school week here, Senator retired General Romeo Dallaire. Have you heard of that name at all?
Yeah.
Well,
yeah.
Of course, Romeo Dallaire was head of the UN peacekeeping mission during the genocide. And, of course, he was the guy that discovered the plot, went to the UN, said, we can stop this. And the UN said, no, you're not to do anything. Can you imagine being able to do something about it and then being told not to?
Well, yeah, as you well know from him, there's a lot more of the UN. They wouldn't let the UN troops even help fight the Hutus who were going there. Remember that one? If you saw Killing Dog Fields?
Yeah.
I don't anybody suggest to watch that. But anyway, the point was they had all those people. Remember inside that bishops or that school, and they put the gates shut? And they lived there for 30 days until they ran out of food, and they opened those gates, and the Hutus came in and slaughtered every single person in the place.
Yeah.
Back to it. If you look at President Kagame, he's a Tutsi. The point is, one of his top people in his own home is a Hutu. So the one thing you don't talk about around him is Hutus and Tutsis. He said there is no longer Hutus. We're all Rwandese. And he doesn't allow anybody to do that.
Well, the bishop of Rwanda got up my nose about that because, you know, what's the difference these days? And he said, you know, we don't even speak like that anymore.
No. And I can't believe the bishop. Isn't he a tremendous human being?
Oh,
he entered
goodness.
Our house last year in Rwanda, and I fell in love with him. He's just I know who you have on. Maybe you had her on. Have you had Immaculate on, Left to Tell?
No, I haven't.
Ellen knows it. She was the lady that wrote a tremendous book. I mean, I don't know what book company, but this book I'll guarantee you will not put down. Write this down as I talk to you on the phone.
Okay, I'm doing it.
Left to Tell, get her on. She lives in New York now. She's one of the six women that lived in a bathroom for 92 days that was 4x8.
I heard this.
And they fed her garbage under the door. She was down to 70 pounds, and she's 6'2".
Wow.
When you hear her story, she speaks now around the world. She's a very close friend. She lives in New York, and you can call Kate back on Monday. Get her number, because I'll tell you what, when you interview her, your listeners are going to fall on the floor because you will not believe the story.
Nice, nice. Okay, look, we got to talk about you, man. Hold on a second here. Jack Hanna, you are known for your storytelling. The animals, the storytelling. Can you give us the top two ones that just, you know, you're going to get a rise out of people? Top two.
Well, I can't say on this station, but No, really. I was bitten by a beaver on the David Letterman show. I almost lost my left thumb. And I don't want to go there with that story because it got to be unbelievable.
Yeah, I can imagine.
Drew Barrymore was on 3 months, but I'll go into that story later. That's a story. I almost lost my finger to a 19-foot anaconda, my right hand, trying to help the guys on Wild Kingdom back in the 70s.
Jim Fowler?
No, yeah, well, it was Stan Brock. Remember, he was a British guy that helped.
Right.
Jim Fowler and Stan Brock. Jim I worked for 1 year in 1973-4. Yep.
Okay.
But, I mean, it's if you read my book, you'll see there's stories there where I try to get the great Melendez. He used to walk across buildings. I try to get them to walk across the tigers, and he almost fell in. I shot the great Grand Zucchini from Ringling over the zoo in 500 feet in the air out of a cannon on a truck that broke. I mean, some of the stuff I've done.
Story after story. Alligators in basements, elephants on the golf course.
Oh, yeah, yeah. My God, elephants on the golf course. I've done so many of these things that I really don't try and do them. That's why it's so sad.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, I'm just telling you, this were all stuff that I thought was good ideas that backfired.
Yeah.
The thing that I laughed at was going after a 10-foot, was it an anaconda or a cobra, with a pillowcase and a rake. You didn't know. Somebody just told you to come and try to get this snake out.
Oh, gosh,
you showed up.
That was in a guy's backyard outside of Ohio, Columbus here, about way out in the country. I went out there and he was on his porch. And this thing was, no, it was, this was a, I'm sorry, that was another snake. This snake was almost 14 feet python. And I put it in the back of a feed bin that he loaned me in the back of the truck. He said, oh, I'll put these concrete blocks with a plywood on top. I'm literally going down Interstate 270 out of Columbus. I was driving about 15 miles and I feel this thing up against my leg when I'm driving. And you know how you just don't think about, you know, and I went down and put my hand under to scratch it, and it was a snake's head coming around from the back he got out of that thing.
Oh,
and I'm going to tell you something.
My.
Even though I know snakes very well, I could have literally just freaked out. Most people would have freaked out.
Have you ever screamed like a girl? Have you ever just done that?
Oh, yeah. I almost was killed in a, the guy was killed after I left in a, oh, yeah, I sure did. I was in a hang glider over Victoria Falls in Africa. I'll never forget, as long as I ever lived, the closest I ever came to dying. The hang glider got caught in a thermal and went down almost probably about 200 feet in about 3 seconds. And, yeah, I screamed like I peed my pants.
Oh, my goodness.
But that snake got up around me. And then the funniest thing, it wasn't funny. It was funny to me, but there were three women. There were sisters at this little old farmhouse. They called up because no one would help them. Called my house and said, there's a big snake in my commode. He's all curled up. Now, you know, I had to have a couple of beers before I did this one. But anyway, I went out there to their home about 8 at night, and sure enough, they were sitting on the couch just shivering, all three of them, like holding hands. And it wasn't very nice. You could tell they worked hard but didn't have much. And I went in the toilet, and there was this huge cord snake about 6 feet long curled up inside this thing. I'll never get as long as I ever live getting that thing out of the toilet bowl and going out there. And they gave me, they were so excited, they gave me enough vegetables from their garden to eat for 10 years. They couldn't pay me, but they said, I love food. So.
Unbelievable. But what's the animal that really makes you sit back and know there's a creator, Jack?
You know, I'm probably not the most fantastic Christian in the world by any means. No, I mean, I know I'm not. My wife is, but myself, no, I've done a lot of things wrong. But the point is,
that makes two of us.
As I travel the world, and I see not just animals, but I see waterfalls. And as you get older, you understand this. Those who are listening are young. You don't understand it until people tell you, until you've seen what I've seen, whether it's Antarctica, whether it's the waterfalls in South America, whether it's the magnificent rainforest, whether it is the beautiful elephants or you know, and let me interject something here because I'll get to this. Evolution. People ask me about my thoughts on evolution. There's no doubt certain animals evolved. Now, there's no doubt about that. That's proven scientifically,
sure.
And any Christian will tell you that.
Yeah.
However, is there a creator? There has to be a creator. If you look at, you heard about the complexity of a human body. If you just look at and think about Earth and what all is being created here, there has to, and as you know, the scientists can't discover how this whole thing really got going as far as us.
Origins,
people.
Yeah, sure.
And once you see it, you begin to understand more about the Earth and how it all started and God and evolution, the whole thing, because it is phenomenal. There is a creator. There has to be because of what I have seen. Mm-hmm. It's beyond comprehension how the chain. I'm not one of these guys. I eat meat, and I'm an average person. You know, I don't hunt. I'm not anti-hunting, by the way. Most hunters are good conservationists. But when you see everything that's done and how it's relied on each other, from the little ants to the germs to the amoebas, to, you understand what I'm saying?
Yeah.
To the largest land mammal on Earth, you see how it all works together, and you go, now who the heck thought of this? Well, trust me, it just didn't come down to some old germ plopping down from the moon or something sitting here. It just blows my mind. And as I get older, it blows my mind more every day. You know, you'd think I'd seen everything. Let me tell you something. I get just excited seeing a bald eagle fly my house in Montana. Or last night I was in Ohio. I saw a deer in my yard. My wife goes, and she and I are screaming. And this one person was coming to the door to get money for a band squad or something. She said, oh, my God, somebody heard us. I said, no, there's a deer in the backyard. And the person goes, aren't you Mr. Hen? I said, yeah. And he goes, well, I can see if it's an elephant back there, but this is a deer. I said, that's a deer, man. That's cool. You know, it just, I don't know, maybe I'm weird. You know.
Well, there's no question you got a tilt to you, that's for sure.
Now,
well,
one last thing
yeah,
about this election, this thing. Are you concerned about what's happening with the presidential thing?
Well, I mean, Canadians barely give a holy grunt about their own election.
Oh, sure. Oh, that's right. I'm sorry. You're in Canada.
Yeah.
I forget the whole thing.
Well,
whatever.
No, that's okay. Fine. Why? What were we going to say? Because I paid attention a little bit. I'm not an ignorant.
I don't know. I'm a Republican, but then again, I'd vote for anybody this time. But the point is, I'm concerned over the standpoint that our country needs a stern person. You know, a person like a John McCain. I'm not saying I was a big fan of his. I'm just saying, you know, as you watch what's developing here, it's interesting.
It is.
And I'm just giving my opinion on there so you can just you can cut this from your show, whatever.
No, that's oh, man, you're right. You know, I think people up in Canada would be more interested in the fact that you've been on Hollywood Squares like a bunch of times.
Oh, yeah, Hollywood Squares. You won't believe the show I just did. Now I'm going to have to go here. I forgot I had another meeting, but who cares? Anyway, you won't believe what I just did. You ever heard of the show Who's Smarter, the Fifth Grader?
Yeah.
Okay, I just taped it about 4 weeks ago. Don't watch, everybody. Please,
oh.
God bless, don't watch. Because what happens, and I'm not a celebrity, but the celebrities that do the show every year, there's six of us, you get to send a minimum. You get $25,000 to do the show, but it has to go to charity, which is what I do anyway. So I go on there. I got my butt cleaned. I'm going to tell you something. Those kids aren't fifth graders.
They're not. No.
Minds of a daggum Yale graduate.
No.
Make me look like a fool, and I ain't ever doing the show again. Jeff Foxworthy's buddy of mine said, don't ever ask me to do this thing again. I'm not doing it ever.
You had to go back to New Hope Church and ask for forgiveness, did you?
Oh, yeah. How'd you know about New Hope? Yeah, Steve Orton. Yeah, I have to go back there and ask something.
Well, listen, man, you are just an absolute gem of a human being. I got to ask you a couple of real quick ones before we say goodbye to you. Thank you for your time, Jack. You're a champion. Is it true that in college you got in trouble for keeping ducks in your dorm room and a donkey in a shed behind your fraternity house? Yes or no?
Oh, yeah. I went to Long Island with my wife who lived in New Jersey. And they were going, oh, there's a duck farm at Long Island Ducks. They were going to kill them all. So I couldn't keep all 40,000 out there. So I got three ducks. I named them Aqueduct, Viaduct, and Oviduct. I brought them back to college. And you won't believe it. They're still on the lake today. They're descendants. Yep. And
okay.
As far as a donkey, that was my donkey Doc from Tennessee. I begged for them to let me bring my donkey to school. I couldn't take him away to school. I sent him away at 15, but I took him to college in the back of my truck. I took him up there, and he's big. Doc stayed there the 4 years Susie used. If you look at the book, you'll see, Ellen, she's got a picture of my wife with the donkey in the book, cheerleading, and his name was Doc. And Doc was all right. I had some kind of incest in my donkeys because I couldn't find a mate for him. So I had five of them. They're all bred together. I didn't want to do that, but it just got all messed up, and then I had to get Doc away from them.
Well, a donkey
that's
is,
how the whole thing started.
Yeah, I mean, a donkey is not that far off from an incestuous breed anyway, the mule.
You're right, I know.
So,
I like the donkey.
Yeah. Let's talk about Betty White. She's a good friend of yours. Matter of fact, you had a little dedication here in front of your book.
Yeah, very close friend. I'll be calling her on Tuesday to have dinner with her when I go out to California to do Ellen next in about 3 weeks. But she is one of the nicest, 84 years old, still lives at home, drives herself, just doing a show with Sandra Bullock this summer on what show it is. I'm sorry, a major motion picture.
Yeah.
But the woman is one of the most kindest, not just animals. She's an incredible animal person. But as far as a human being, she doesn't even know she's Betty White. She is like the person you might meet on the street. She is kinder to a guy that picks up trash in L.A. to the person who might be the president of the country. And that's what I love about Betty White.
You know, I saw her and a gentleman I've come to know over the last couple of years, Gavin McLeod. They were on the Mary Tyler Moore reunion show on Oprah.
Yep.
And they just had a blast, and they're the same. What you've told me about Betty White is the same about Gavin McLeod. Absolutely humble, genuine, authentic.
You got it.
You know, just real deal, right?
She's unbelievable. That's all I can tell you.
All right. What gets you mad? You are one of the happiest, easy-go-lucky kind of fun guys on TV, but something must get you mad, Jack.
Yeah, it does. I'm a person that is 90% of the time just me like I am, but when I get mad, I'm sorry, I just blow. I can't stand it. I hate it, but that's just, I'm not one of these persons that gets kind of mad. You know, you've seen that before.
Yeah.
I just am always nice.
You're like long fuse, big bomb.
Exactly. One thing that got me the maddest ever was on the Bill Maher show. You ever heard of that little guy?
Yeah, I have.
Bill Maher?
Yep.
Maher, whatever his name is.
Yep.
Who knows?
Yep.
He accused me of drugging my animals for TV on national. I did a show with him, national show, which I shouldn't have done. And I'm going to tell you something. I came the closest. If you ever see me get excited, my neck, my blood vessels almost pop out of my neck, and my head gets swollen. I have this little cut I busted my head in college, and it starts swelling on me. And you'll notice about 10 seconds. And it started up, and I thought my neck was going. I came up out of the chair. If you saw the tape, I start coming up out of it because he wouldn't stop. He said, I know you drug your animals. I said, I've never drugged any animal ever. And 30-something years, never have I ever done that. I take more better care of these animals than you do most of your people here. And then he wouldn't let up because I didn't know he was a member of PETA. But whatever, it got worse and worse. And,
so he's a member of PETA?
Oh, yeah.
Oh, that's nice. Well, that kind of says it all right there, really.
Yeah, but whatever. Anyway.
Well, let's change from that goofy subject to what do you like better, Golden Labs or Golden Retrievers? Because you got one of each.
I have both. Yeah, I just both of them I wouldn't give for anything in the world.
Really?
Maybe my wife.
They probably eat less.
Yeah, exactly.
You know, going back to that again. Jack Hanna, folks, Jungle Jack Hanna is the man. The book is Jungle Jack, My Wildlife. And, of course, he's got this children's book going as well, Jack Hanna's Passport into the Wild. Kids join Jungle Jack in an exciting, interactive, and educational excursion across the seven continents. And the website is very simple. It's called jackhanna.com. You have been an absolute blast.
Well, I hope you, and thank you so much for having me on. Hope we can do it again. And thank you all, Ellen, for hope the book does well for you.
Oh, thank you. It was fun to read, so.
It will.
Well, enjoyed doing your show. I really did.
All right. Thanks, man. Talk to you again, Jack.
Okay, y'all be good.
All right. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
Y'all be good. I like that guy, huh?
He's fun. I would sit and listen to him talk for hours and hours.
He's more ADD than me.
He's fun.
Oh, are you saying he's more fun than me?
No, that's fun.
No, I get what you're saying.
I like it. It keeps going. There's a pace.
All right, folks, a short break on the show. That's what we do here on the Drew Marshall Show. We take short breaks. And when we come back, we're going to open up the phone lines for the first time for season number 6. We thought we'd start off the season with the most compelling talkback segment we have. I'm being a little facetious because you never know what's going to happen. Never, ever know what people are going to call in about during our free-for-all. 905-338-1250. This is the only segment in which you, the callers, decide the topics. So, give us a call. 905-338-1250. Call us right now. We got giveaways like you wouldn't believe from R.G. Mitchell Family Books. A lot of good stuff to give out here. Talk about whatever you want. Politics, religion, sports, yodeling, Drew. Always love talking about me. We'll be right back. Stay with us. Next animal that he did meet had a wool on his back and hoofs on his feet. Eating grass on a mountainside so steep. Oh, I think I'll call it a sheep.
Like what you've heard? Listen again online at drewmarshall.ca.
All the animals in the beginning.